Today's special episode of She Explores was made in partnership with Mountain Hardware. This collaboration is both a celebration of Earth Day, which is coming up on Monday, and of Mountain Hardware launching their most environmentally sustainable collection of apparel and equipment in their 25-year history. This collection includes a redesign of all of their tents, packs, and sleeping bags. That is a big deal and a conscious choice. Mountain Hardware believes that sustainability is an opportunity to do better, not a box that they need to check. Later in the episode, we'll talk about their new 82% recycled Lamina Eco AF sleeping bags and their line of tents made without fire retardant materials. Learn more by heading to mountainhardware.com. I'm Gail Straub, and you're listening to She Explores.
Definitely an optimist. I tend to see the silver lining in lots of dark, difficult situations, and I like things to work and for things to be successful and for people to be happy and do what they love, or, you know, it kind of applies to all areas of my life. But overall, I definitely think I am an optimist. I like to see the positive.
This Earth Day, we're looking on the bright side. We're asking, how can a sense of environmental optimism keep us facing forward? What strength do we gain when we're comfortable starting fresh, whether it's a climbing route in our personal lives or in our approach to sustainability? For this episode, we'll climb and camp in Moab, Utah with Mountain Hardware Ambassador Kylie Fly, who knows thinking outside the box is beneficial to all aspects of life. Here's Kylie.
Well, we have been out here in Moab climbing and camping and hanging out and sharing amazing conversations, watching my dog run around and cause havoc. Yeah, just enjoying one another's company in this beautiful Moab weather. It's been great.
What's your dog's name?
Huck. My dog's name is Huck, and he's a fun little dude.
He's looking at us.
Yeah. He's like, where are you at? What you doing?
It was a busy weekend in Moab, but we found a campsite along the Colorado River. I haven't been here since I was 16 and on my first road trip out west. I never forgot the red rock and that intensely blue sky, though. That rushing sound you hear is the Colorado River, and it's pretty much a constant at the campsite. It looked just like chocolate milk rushing by. Moab is a pretty popular place to visit, especially to do outdoor activities. So the conversation that Kylie and I have about environmental optimism feels especially pertinent. There's a lot of impact that goes on when we recreate, and it can feel like a bit of a double-edged sword. We've talked about on this podcast how we protect what we love, and having these positive experiences in the natural world make us want to be better recreators, to be more sustainable, to do more for the environment. But we're also taking from the place when we visit there. So it can feel like a pretty big challenge, how to balance the two, how to balance being a sustainable and responsible outdoor enthusiast. On that note, you're going to hear some cars in the background. There are people driving by. We weren't in the middle of nowhere. We were right by a road by the river. Sometimes camping is car camping. And sometimes there are other people around. It's just a matter of navigating that in the best way that's possible for you. You might remember Kylie from an earlier episode of She Explores. She talked about doing the work of becoming a professional adventure photographer. It's been so fun to see her portfolio grow. I didn't know it then, but she was new to climbing. So when did you start climbing?
I've only been climbing a couple of years. I would even say, I was actually thinking about it today while I was hanging on the rope. It's probably been 2 years. And I got introduced to climbing maybe 3 years ago, but it takes a while to get into it and to learn and find mentors and then actually be consistent. Really, to be a good climber, you really have to climb super consistently. So mm-hmm. I just climb as much as I can because I love it so much. And I feel like I climbed more last year than I ever have the previous years. And so I would say not terribly long, but I just do as much as I can when I have the opportunity.
What do you love about it?
I love climbing because it is so much fun, but also I am really scared of heights, and I always have been. And so when I got into climbing, my triplet sisters were like, "You cray, like, we already know you're so scared of heights. Like, that's so weird for you." And I'm like, "I know, but like, I do like, it sounds cliche and we've all heard this before, but I do like to be scared. I like to do things that put me out of my comfort zone." And because it's really, you're not going to do something that's like outrageous and like you're going to die. Like, you approach things with like, okay, this is cool and looks interesting and fun, I want to try it. And you do the homework. You don't just dive in and like have no idea what you're doing, especially with climbing. Like, you get the right gear, you get the knowledge, you get the skills. Like, if you have to, you know, work with a mentor, or you make friends with people and like learn as you go. And a lot of things, like anything in life, are trial and error. But with climbing, and anything in the mountains, really, I'm really intentional about how I learn, because there's nothing more rewarding than feeling like you earned where you're at. And to lean on people in situations when you don't know what you're doing or how to do something, and feeling totally clueless, is kind of like a powerless feeling. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone that's done anything in the mountains has done that, where they've like had to default to someone next to them that has way more experience, way more skills. Like, oh, gee whiz, I'm really glad that person can like hang right now, because I'm losing my marbles or whatever. But it's like, my goal is to like be the best and the strongest I can be. And I know that I have to be patient with myself, because I'm not going to get there as fast as other people around me, perhaps. But we just have to focus on our own journeys. And that's what I love about it. It's a challenge to yourself. And it's really motivating. And it's hard. And it makes you sweaty. And it's just like all around good. And I love the community. I love the vibe. People are pretty loving and inviting. And it's got its quirks like anything. But I just think that's the challenge that I try to seek in my life, is for self-improvement.
Mm. And climbing, you get to see a lot of visible improvement.
Oh, yeah. It's a physical flow. Like, it's a movement. And so you're using your body in ways you've never used it before if you've never climbed. And it's also extremely mental. Talk to anybody that climbs, especially when you're leading on gear and things like that. It's very mental. So if your emotional state is off, you're going to suffer in some way. Mm-hmm. If your physical state is off, as if, like, you're not training or you're not climbing or out of shape, you're not going to be able to do certain things, just period, like anything. But it's like this cool balance of like mental, spiritual, physical that I love, because they all kind of come together in a weird way. And I feel like with climbing, it's one of the only times I'm very present. I'm a very wandering, distracted mind. I have a lot going on in there, and like, it's really hard for me to slow it down and just chill. There's very few times in my life that I can relax and chill. And I would not describe myself a chill climber, for sure. Like, if you've climbed with me, you're like, that girl ain't chill. And like, that's because I'm like, oh, I'm trying so hard. But like, in the mind, at least, I'm able to stop and breathe and focus. And like, all you have to deal with is what's right in front of you. And I think that's part of the magic, is like, okay, I'm just focused here. I'm here, and it's like this right now, and this is what I need to do, and I'm not gonna worry about anything else, because this is what I'm doing. And it's really taught me to be present and hopefully apply it to the other areas of my life.
What jumps out for me in talking with Kylie is the value of recognizing positive incremental change, especially when you're confronting something big like a climbing wall or climate change. Channeling your focus on the next small steps helps you keep things in perspective, and it coaxes out optimism. I went to a place called Wall Street in Moab to see Kylie and her friend Allie in action. Wall Street is like nothing I've ever seen before, especially coming from the East Coast. There's a sheer sandstone face just about 15 feet or so from the road. The Colorado River flows by on the other side. As far as I can see, there are vans and trucks and SUVs parked along the road, and climbers hanging from ropes and belaying partners from the ground. Ironically, it's me who feels like a fly on the wall, watching this all happen. There's a lot of ritual that surrounds climbing, packing and unpacking your gear, staking out a spot. I can see why people get into it.
Okay, this is Kylie getting ready to climb. So what are you grabbing?
I'm gonna grab my stuff for Jumari to shoot Allie as she climbs.
What's Jumari?
Jumari.
Jumari.
Yeah. Jugging up the rope so I can get above my climber.
Okay.
And then shoot them leading.
That's cool.
Really cool. And it's really fun. So basically I just need like a different type of rope, static rope, and some different pieces of gear. just like aid climbing, basically.
It's like what?
Aid climbing. Yeah. Pretty much the same thing. I'm just gonna bring this in case you need pieces from me. Plus, I also have this wonderfully large pack.
It is nice.
I'm gonna put it to use.
Wow.
I'm gonna organize over there. Yeah, so I usually just go.
I asked Kylie if she had advice for new climbers, people like me who feel intimidated by getting started.
Oh yeah, I mean, I still feel like a beginner. I feel like I have that attitude in life where I'm like, never gonna be pro, or like. Anyway, but yeah, I feel like having the mindset of always learning is kind of my natural state. So I never feel like I'm at a point where I'm like, oh, here I am doing things and I'm so great. Like, I kind of feel like I'm always a beginner in that way. The first step for sure is to just have the courage to be like, look, I can do this. Because so much of climbing is built around confidence, in my opinion. And it is like intimidating, like mad intimidating. I was so intimidated by climbing when I looked at it, like, going into climbing gyms would give me so much anxiety, like, and I mostly climbed outside, but even my first time going to a gym, it's just like, whoa, this is so scary, and like, I don't know, there was something about it that wasn't like anything else that I'd done before. And so I think just believing in yourself and being stoked on it is gonna help a lot, because then you're just gonna find a way to do it. It's one thing to be excited about something but like never make moves. And I think the only way you're going to like make any kind of headway in anything that excites you is if you do something about it and you take action. So I always tell people, like, look, if you want to climb, you should start climbing. Like, just find a way to climb, which obviously requires other people, because climbing's not like skiing where you can go lollygag around by yourself in a resort or whatever until you learn what you want to do next. But you do rely on partners, and so it's good to make friends in the community. Like, I wish there was like a really easy answer for people, but there kind of isn't. You just have to kind of wedge your way in and like make friends, make connections, network. And whether you start in a gym or start outside, there's a lot of different approaches to it. And just connecting with people and be like, hey, here's where I'm at. Here's the level I'm on. Like, this is kind of what I'm looking to do and hoping to do. And these are my goals. And being really clear, upfront, and honest about where you are and where you want to be. And then going from there. But like anything in life, I think it starts with friendships. Like, everything starts with connections with people. It's, I think, just the best approach to life in general, just because we need each other, and we need each other to like get stuff done, and we definitely need each other to climb because you need a belay or whatever. And so, yeah, that's what I always say. Looking for mentorship is the ideal, but it does require a certain type of person to be willing to mentor. And I think anyone who knows how to climb and has a point where they can, if they can successfully climb, I guess, then I do think it's our duty to like pass that on. Like, if we want people to learn how to climb and be safe and have fun, I think everyone should take a swing at like teaching and helping and guiding their friends or people that want to get in. And like, I am so stoked to just be climbing no matter what. And so if I have friends that are like, hey, I've never climbed before, but I'd love to give it a go, then yeah, you make it a chillin', fun, mellow day or whatever. So I think it's important to share what you know and pass it on to your friends and invite them into this world of loveliness.
That's cool. Weird.
How was that one? Oh, well, I guess you didn't climb yet. What is it called?
Visible Panty Line.
Oh, that's one we already talked about.
That's a climb, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Looks like your Sally said you like to get in the creases, right?
Yeah. Well, I like, my favorite is, like, Indian Creek, really. Like, the splitters there are just, like, so fun.
Have there been any instances where you've approached a problem or a route and you've had to kind of start from scratch in the way you approached it?
Yeah. Oh. I think for sure. Like anybody would say, like, the beta for any climb is different for different people, because like, I'm this tall and my partner is that tall, or, you know, I have this ape index and that person has this one. And so you're going to climb different than your partner or your friends or who knows, like, unless you're like, oh, we're very similar types and same technique, whatever. And so there's general beta that obviously is like the move, like the thing you got to do to get up. But sometimes we have to get creative and kind of do what works for our body. Like, I might have to do a weird move that no one else had to do, because that's as far as my flexibility goes, or whatever. And like, you know, your strengths. And I think that's kind of the cool creative part of climbing, is like, well, I know that like, this is something I'm kind of good at, or like that I feel like I've been developing, and like that type of move definitely isn't. So I guess in those ways you can kind of interpret your climbing, which is what attracts me to trad climbing, because everyone just, you know, we all call it adventure climbing, because it's like, you're kind of setting your own route, and it's creative in the sense that you have a general, like, obviously there's like a line you gotta get up there, and you study the beta, and you look at the routes, and you look at the books and the guidebooks and read about it and all the things. So you feel prepared going in, you know what gear to bring, but at the same time, you might do something weird, end up in a weird place that you was off route, and who knows, you find a way to get up. And that's what's kind of cool about it, is you get in all kinds of situations. You're like, oh, I don't know how I got here, but here I am, and now what? And so it's a lot of problem solving, which makes it, who knows, creative.
Does it feel good when you complete a route?
Oh my gosh, it always feels amazing. I'm always like, okay, first, I'm alive. Yes, I made it. And like, yeah, it's just a good feeling. Finishing a climb is especially wonderful, because it's never easy to me. Like, I had a friend that was like, oh, that felt easy. And like, oh, I can't wait for the day where I'm like, that felt easy. Because I always feel challenged, which, you know, it's part of my learning curve. But pushing yourself too, to like keep doing progressively harder things. And yeah, just topping out is always a great feeling. You finished it, you did it, you're here, you're alive, you get to enjoy the view.
Enjoying the view often feels sweeter after the challenge of problem solving, of digging in and pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone. We'll hear more from Kylie about starting fresh after this. Like Kylie, Mountain Hardwear isn't afraid to start from scratch. It's why they decided to redesign their whole tent collection this spring, and why they've furthered their stand against the use of fire-retardant chemicals. Here's Kylie.
They have been doing something that's been working all these years. They basically looked at it and were like, okay, just because it's going well and it's, you know, fine, doesn't mean it needs to stay that way. And they were able to look at something and be creative and innovative about it and make changes to something and take kind of a risk in that way, to be like, let's try something different.
Mountain Hardwear isn't afraid to diverge from the norm either. They are the first major U.S. brand to eliminate unnecessary fire-retardant chemicals from its full line of tents, resulting in more sustainable, progressive, and breathable designs.
It takes bold moves like that to make changes, and for a brand that's been around and like knows what they're doing, I think that's pretty awesome to do that and like kind of be a leader in that way.
So here's what happened. Decades ago, a small number of states adopted laws that were meant to boost safety for canvas event tents. Today, these laws hold back modern recreational tent design, requiring unnecessarily the addition of fire-retardant chemicals to all tents. Most states, and even large markets like the European Union, do not require flame retardants on these tents, which confirmed Mountain Hardwear's belief that the chemicals are just not needed.
I think anytime you can eliminate any kind of toxin is pretty awesome. So it's like, yeah, less chemicals, the better.
Learn more about Mountain Hardwear's completely redesigned tents by heading to mountainhardwear.com/tents. That's mountainhardwear.com/tents. We're back.
What's your triangle mean?
That's my triplet tattoo. So when I got it, it's like, we all go through like our good times and bad times, and like during the bad times, I feel like a lot of times one triplet kind of has to hold the other two up in some ways. Aww. It's pretty symbolic, I guess, where they end up kind of supporting you, and so we kind of rotate who's the base. Of like, we each have a side, obviously, and we all balance each other out and take turns being the strong one.
I love that.
Yeah.
So we've been talking about climbing and starting over. Have there been instances in your life where you feel like you've kind of started from scratch and had to problem solve your way through?
Oh, definitely. Several. I can think of at least two major benchmarks.
Yeah.
I'll talk about one because the other one's a little bit more emotional. But I think one, like being a triplet, an identical triplet, roommates to roommates. And so I think like that's a pretty big one for me because I went from like kind of sharing in a sense my identity with two other people, and you can relate because you're a twin. Yeah, just like growing up, like a lot of people didn't know like who was who. They didn't know who Kylie was or Lisa or Megan. We all looked the same. And so it was hard to kind of find your own self by yourself and to be identified as such. And so it came to a point in our lives when we all parted ways and, you know, everybody lived their own separate lives. And I remember when that happened, it kind of felt like a giant breakup. It's like, okay, my identity and world has been like shaped around being a part of this unit. Like, I don't think many will understand that type of bond unless they are multiple, because it is weird. It's unique. It's funky. And it's like, unless you're one of us, I don't know that you'll really get it, because it's like you share everything and you grew up together and you're like, you know, siblings and whatnot. It's not like a typical brother, sister, sister, sister thing. It's different. And so having to kind of break off and be like, okay, who am I on my own and what do I want out of life? That was a big thing where you, in a lot of ways, feel like you have to start from scratch because you went from this sister did that and like you balance each other out, and I didn't have to worry about it because she was so good at it. So in those ways, you're leaning on each other and becoming codependent when you don't really realize it. And I think everyone, whether it's a relationship or a partnership or a sister or brother or mom or dad, I don't know, it can relate to any kind of relationship or connection. At some point, you need to break off on your own and just start from scratch, because I think it's good to challenge yourself and be like super independent and figure that out. And when I had to do that, I learned a lot and it was great. Lots of growth.
Was that when you were 20 and went to China?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, when I went to China, I was like, oh, here I go, bye. And like I was 20 and I was the first one to like leave the little triplet nest. And I remember just being like, this is bizarre. And like emailing them, because we would email like once a week. And, you know, I remember having a few cries over there thinking, this is crazy. I miss them so much, because you're just so connected. But man, it was so good. Because when I did that, it wasn't long before each of them like kind of went off and did their own things and started traveling internationally and being like, ooh, that looks fun. And like, we all just kind of started developing our own selves in that way and like discovering different things. I mean, that's when I discovered photography, was when I moved to China and like was like, ooh, this is awesome. Like, I might try to do this with my life. And I think each of us kind of in our own ways discovered new selves that wasn't built around the identity of two others. And I think that's important.
Definitely. I did it at 17. I went to a like a sleepaway like high school like advanced studies program for like 6 weeks in the summer. And it was the first time we'd had more than one night apart. And I cried for the first 2 weeks. Like, every night, cried myself to sleep. They thought they were going to send me home. And then I got through that. And then I felt so good. I did feel like a little bit like I was reborn in certain ways. Yeah. And it was so much easier to go to college after that, because we went to separate schools.
Oh, yeah.
So it was so much easier. And then she didn't really get that feeling. She ended up... she didn't go to the school program, and she worked at like Dunkin' Donuts at home. Mm-hmm. And because she was still at home, she was still like surrounded by her like familiar environment. She didn't like miss me. She didn't feel sad about it. And then when we went to college, that's when it really hit her, and it was really hard. And it felt like another breakup. It was like two breakups, and you know, ultimately, I'm so glad that we're not, you know, so tied up together. But I hear that on
it's a challenge, but I think it's good. Putting yourself in unfamiliar situations that become your new familiar, it's always good.
Always good.
Challenges are good.
For a lot of us, looking at the big problem that is climate change can feel like an insurmountable challenge. A lot like looking up at a root at Wall Street or crying yourself to sleep at night as a teenager. But optimism in the face of challenges can be both a test of strength and something that makes us stronger as we look forward. How do you feel in terms of like when you have conversations about conservation and the environment? Where does optimism play a role, and where should realism play a role?
Yeah, I think optimism is super important in that, because it's really easy to get down on things in general, like everything, and be super negative about like, oh, here's all these issues, let's just whine about them all day and be really upset and get fired up. And that's like, I think it's important to be fired up. It's important to have passion, to have fire about topics that are of interest to you or pertain to you or whatever, they're in your world, and so it's like on your mind and actually happening around you. That's important. That's what creates change. But I think when you have a positive outlook on it and you're optimistic about it and you're like, look, here's all these issues, let's talk about them and look at them. But instead of being like upset and angry and pointing fingers and playing this game of like, oh, well, it's because of this, it's because of that. And like, the blame game never gets anywhere. And so when people are able to be accountable and be like, okay, here's the issues, but like, what can I do about it? And like, that's when optimism comes in and like, people being able to see like, oh, there's something I can do that does make a difference. And I might be one tiny speck on this giant planet cover of specks, but like, it does make a difference. And that's where everything starts. So I think just having that outlook instead of making it a negative experience and looking at what's lacking or like what's failing, you recognize that because obviously there's an issue, but we need to look for opportunities and like what's working and like what's going well, and then like keep going with those things as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you think about specs, like if you have like an infinitely large number of specs, like that ends up creating real change. Like, oh, all yeah, those little specs add up.
So actually that reminds me, a friend of mine said, just think about the effect a mosquito has. Like, say you're in your tent camping and there's one mosquito in your tent. And like everybody, anyone can relate to this at some point in their life where that mosquito, like you woke up and you were like covered in bites. And they're like, man, I just got attacked by that one tiny mosquito. That's such a small, small little dude. And like, look how much influence he had. He gave you so many bites. And so I like to think of it that way because it's like, we may feel so small in the grand scheme of things, but like the things you do matter.
We'll talk more about what we can do, how we can be that mosquito in the face of climate change after this. Can you believe it? Mountain Hardwear's Lamina sleeping bag has always been designed for comfort, but now they've designed one, the Lamina Eco AF, that's 82% recycled. Mountain Hardwear thrives on thinking outside of the box and sees a move towards sustainability as an opportunity for innovation and a healthier planet.
It's super light, which I always think about weight because, you know, I often have to carry it around. And so I love when things are light. And it's super soft. Things that feel good, just you kind of want to crawl into. And so when you touch it, you're like, ooh, that's nice. And it's white, which is freaking awesome. I just think of like polar bears and the abominable snowman and beautiful winter. And I just think it's pretty cool looking. Never seen anything like it.
And it being weight saved, I think 23 gallons of water for each bag that was produced.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Can you believe that 1,159 cell phones could be charged with all the emissions saved in the making of the sleeping bag?
That is awesome. And also just like presenting it to us, the normal consumer that doesn't do a lot of research on science things, perhaps. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I won't speak for everyone, but I definitely don't like look up all these funny facts. But like, that's something that's super relatable and understandable. Like, we know what it takes to charge a cell phone, especially when you spend a lot of your time in the backcountry and you have one little charge thingy, those little travel charger packs. And so thinking about that and then multiplying it, that's a huge number. And I think that's pretty awesome.
Discover Mountain Hardwear's whole new line of sleeping bags by heading to mountainhardwear.com/sleeping-bags. That's mountainhardwear.com/sleeping-bags. We're back. So thinking about things that you integrate into your life, is living sustainably or different ways of conserving energy or making simple choices, is that something that you've incorporated into your life?
Definitely. I think there's a lot of simple ways we can do this. Like, it's really easy to be overwhelmed by the big picture. I mean, we all look at it and we're like, oh my gosh, there's so much bad. You know, there's so many things going wrong. And it's like, oh, there's so much work to be done. And it can be very overwhelming. And it's hard to know where to start. And I think like anything in life, you have a big project, you look at it and you're like, oh my gosh, this is so intimidating. And you walk away and you leave the mess and you think about it. And you're like, I'll deal with it later. Just gonna ignore it for now because like that elephant is too big. Whereas like if you chip away at things and you do little things, it makes a difference. Like, we often think that, like, we don't make a difference. We're one person on a planet of, what, 7 billion or something? And so it's like the little things do matter. And that's why I think there's these big ideas, big things that need to happen, big changes. But it requires human beings. And we're like, an active agent that makes changes. And we can inspire others and motivate others and, like, try to bring people in and, like, you know, share ideas and spread spread the disease of positive change or whatever. Disease isn't the right word. You know what I mean? The movement.
Yeah.
So like this rant being that, like, I think the little things that we do matter, like recycling, like stuff that's easy. Like, it's actually not hard, but, you know, sometimes if you didn't grow up recycling or if you've never tried it, you might think, what a pain. I have to have two bins. Oh my. But it's like not difficult. And like, that's like a small thing. And if you're thoughtful and intentional about it and you have a separate bin and you rinse the things, you do the research for your neighborhood or your area, your community, and see what they do take and what they don't, because recycling isn't going to do you any good if you're dumping everything in there that you're like, well, this must be recyclable, because then you're actually creating more work for the recycling people at the plant where they have to separate and spend hours and hours separating and cleaning and disposing of things. And so it's not just the act of recycling, but it's like knowing what you can and cannot recycle depending on where you live. That's also an important step that I think gets skipped sometimes. And then things like composting. My mom always composted growing up. I think you appreciate a lot more from your family and your parents as an adult, because you can look back at life and think, oh, that's what that weird pile of vegetable shavings was. That's why mom always kept the potato peels. I mean, I don't know. I didn't know what they were for. But mom was composting, and then she'd put it in the garden, and then it would, like, grow. And, like, what a cool thing to learn from my mom that I didn't really realize until later.
We also talked about the simple choice of not using single-use plastic. Whenever possible, bringing along a reusable coffee cup, water bottle, and grocery bag.
That's a small thing, but, like, I started doing that years ago when I started thinking about it more. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, that's not a big deal. You carry your own water bottle around, use it all the time, and fill it up, and it's great. Saving plastic. And then, like, not using plastic bags and, like, using canvas totes or, you know, things like that, and just always having it on you so there's not an excuse. Like, get to a grocery store and be like, oh, I forgot my bags, which I've totally done. But, you know, if you have, like, a couple here and there and everywhere, wherever you are, then you don't have the opportunity to, like, add to the mess.
Is, like, sustainability in outdoor gear something that's, like, newer to you as a concept? Because I know it's newer to me, just thinking about what the materials that go into products.
Yeah, I think for sure. I think it's definitely something that's being pushed right now. And so we're talking about it a lot more. And we're thinking about the products that we're buying and where they were sourced and how they were made and whether it was a sustainable source or, like, you know, the ethics behind whoever's making the product. You know, you can get real deep and go real far with that type of information. But I think that's something that oftentimes we're disconnected from because we just like, oh, that's cute. I want it. Oh, that's something I need. I'm going to buy that. And so being more thoughtful about, like, what you need and what you want from a product and, like, looking into the brand and, like, what they're doing to make initiatives, whether it's, like, supporting organizations or funding even things or creating movements to, like, source properly or ethically or what have you. I think that makes a difference because you're aware of what you're supporting with your money. Because, like, when you're going to spend money on gear, you want it to go to good places generally. You might not think about it when you buy a jacket that looked cool on the rack, but, like, if you know more about the story behind it, I think it's more meaningful and your impact is more meaningful.
What advice do you have for people who would like to recreate in a more environmentally conscious way?
Oh, I think there's a lot of ways. I mean, it's stuff you've all heard before, but carpooling is a big one. Like, anywhere where there's a lot of cars, which I feel like is a lot of places these days.
We've heard them last 24 hours.
Just carpool. Like, there's no point or reason to have everybody in their own vehicles. It clogs up the roads and it also clogs up the parking lots at trailheads and whatnot. So I think carpooling is always great, which means, you know, a little more planning ahead of time. And then also riding your bicycle to commute is simple. It's simple things. Like, it also gives you exercise, so it doubles, you know, it's physical workout and whatnot. But I think, like, that's something that I've been intentional about too, is riding my bike a ton, like making conscious choices to do that, which is actually something Mountain Hardwear supports. Like, their employees, they have, like, an impact program, an incentive program where if their employees commute to work, like, they have some kind of incentive. And so that's a motivating thing because sometimes people need rewards to make changes. And then at some point it becomes a habit and they no longer need to be rewarded because they feel rewarded by the goodness of their commute. So it's like things like that, that do make a difference.
Okay. I want to recap the advice Kylie had about recreating in a sustainable way. She mentioned carpooling, recycling, avoiding single-use plastics, purchasing from brands that are incorporating recycled materials and sustainable business practices, as well as incorporating that into their mission and work culture. I want to also add a few more tips. It's important to tread lightly on the landscape and follow Leave No Trace principles. I'll include a link in our show notes if you're interested in learning more. In a similar vein, keep an eye out for obvious trash and even little bits of micro trash that you see on the trail and at campsites. You've probably heard the phrase, leave it better than you found it. Carrying out your trash and the trash of others is one way to do that. It's tough, but we all have to recognize that whatever we do, we're taking from a place when we recreate there. There will be an impact, but it's key to be as respectful as possible. That goes with interacting with the people there and also taking the time to learn about the history of the land that you're recreating on. Like all the United States, Moab is native land. It's Ute territory. It's also worth noting that it's great to buy new gear that's sustainably sourced, but you might be surprised what companies do gear repairs, what used gear stores are out there, and how many friends might be willing to let you borrow gear, especially when you're just getting started. It sounds like a lot you can do when you start listing it out. Sharing tips and a positive attitude with friends sets a precedent that catches on. I want to leave us with a few final thoughts on optimism from Kylie.
If we're all riding that negative train, where I think a lot of times in the industry or in life in general, it's really easy to point out the things that are disappointing us or failing us. And sometimes we're looking so much at that aspect that we're forgetting to see, like I mentioned earlier, like what is working and what's going well. And perhaps instead of focusing so hard on what's not working, we can also be celebrating what is. And I think when we make those shifts, then it naturally is going to channel energy into continuing that. Because like if you're going to focus so much on the negative, it's easy to like join that crew and point fingers and just be all upset about it. But if you're like, well, hey, like people are doing this, people are doing that, they're, and you can, you know, make your little list of sustainable action. And then like you're going to want to be included in that. You're going to want to join that. And that's what a force is. That's what creates movements and that's what creates changes, because people are getting excited and stoked instead of the opposite. And I think that is more inspiring and more motivating when we're focusing on that, because it doesn't negate the fact that there's issues, and it's not like they're ignoring it or avoiding it or not seeing it and acknowledging it. They're just choosing to focus on it in a different way. Mm. And like, they're like, yeah, we see that. Like, we're not blind, but like, look at all this that's happening and let's just keep going. And yeah, we can make changes to improve it. And like, there's new ways we can do it too. It's not like we've stopped thinking and now, well, it's working. Let's just keep going with that for the rest of our lives. Cause obviously things are changing all the time. So I think just channeling our energy into that, so to speak, optimistic channel, wait, optimistic view, optimistic course of action. I think that helps because you're moving in a good direction.
Thank you to Kylie Fly for the conversation and openness. It was so nice to spend time with you and get to know you better. Thank you to Mountain Hardware for sponsoring this very special episode. You can learn more at mountainhardware.com. Thank you as well to my business partner and host of the Women on the Road podcast, Laura Hughes, for showing me around Moab. It's a really special place. And if you haven't checked out Women on the Road yet, it's not to be missed. Final thanks to climber Allie Oakes for the company and the conversation. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. I've heard it helps other people find us. Also, if you found something of value here or in any other episode, please share the show with a friend. Like we talked about, it all adds up. Music is by Lee Rosevear, Josh Woodward, and Kay Engel, using a Creative Commons Attributions license. Music is also by Liam McNally. We'll be off next week, but if you live in Seattle, Portland, Oregon, or San Francisco, we have She Explores book events coming up in early May. I'll list the link to all the events on the episode landing page. But until then, have fun out there.
I love all candy, but I kind of go through phases. Like, I went through a Butterfinger phase for a long time.
Ooh.
And I got a Milky Way because I like caramel. But I don't really know. I love Junior Mints for some reason. Like, I love Heath bars. I kind of just love it all. But I don't like anything with coconut. Gross. Or yeah. Peanuts.
No peanut. Oh, peanut butter is okay?
No, yeah. Love Reese's. I mean, I'll eat a Snickers.
Yeah.
But I mostly avoid, like, peanuts and chocolate. Kind of just makes me sad.
Mm. So no Goober.
Oh, yeah. Goober's a nightmare. Almond Joy's a nightmare.
Oh, Almond Joy's.
Yeah, it's gross. Like, who invented that? Gross.